WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Two of TV's greatest sitcoms starred my guest, Mary Tyler Moore, The Dick Van Dyke Show, and of course, The Mary Tyler Moore Show. Here's a typical Mary moment. Lou Grant wants to add some comedy to the newscast, so they've auditioned a guy who writes for Chuckles the Clown. His commentary on grocery shopping isn't very funny, but Mary is doing her best to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, well, you certainly were right again, Mr. Grant. Boy, I gotta give you that. I mean, this is just what our show can use. It's got warmth, charm, humor. Boy, you sure were right. Don't you think that you were right, Mr. Grant?
Mary, I don't think that belongs on our show.
But, Mr. Grant, this is just the kind of material that people can identify with. I mean, like what we just saw. Everybody goes to the supermarket.
I don't go to the supermarket.
Well, I mean, you got to admit it was fun. I mean, all right, it wasn't funny, but it was certainly funny, sort of...
Whimsical?
Right, whimsical.
I hate that.
Over the years, Mary Tyler Moore has played two extremes very convincingly. The sitcom Mary, the person everyone wants as their best friend, and the cold, steely character she portrayed in the film Ordinary People. She's got a pretty tough exterior in her new series, New York News. Now Mary Tyler Moore tells about the real Mary in her autobiography, After All. Her first big break in show business was playing the happy Hot Point elf for Hot Point appliance commercials broadcast during the Ozzie and Harriet show.
Happy Hot Point was the logo of Hot Point Appliances come to life, an elf, a little figure with a shock of blonde hair protruding from her little gray pixie cap that also had ears on it. But I was Happy Hot Point, and I would, in these commercials, be superimposed on the ice cube trays, skating, popping out of the washing machine, speaking to Harriet Nelson and saying things like, "Hi, Harriet, aren't you glad you use Hot Point appliances?" Except my voice was higher then, so it sounded a lot more pixie-ish than it does now. What had happened was that at that time, and this was immediately after graduating from high school, I also got married immediately after graduating from high school. And about a month after that, I was pregnant. And the commercials were almost impossible to do anymore because I had my breasts bound down to begin with, even before I was pregnant, because pixies are supposedly of neuter gender. And to try to do that after I was even 1 month along, and certainly into two and three, was impossible. And so we had to stop. And I think they just went to straight commercials after that. And I went on to happily have my baby a few months after that.
Well, after you had your baby, you were the voice of the woman in the answering service for the TV detective Richard Diamond.
Right. That was played by David Janssen, and it was, I guess it had started on radio, and one of the successful elements of it was a character called Sam, short for Samantha, who was the answering service woman who took Richard Diamond's telephone messages. This was, of course, predating answering machines. And he would check in with me two or three times every episode, and I would answer in the sexiest imaginable voice, "Hi, Mr. T. I have some messages for you." And nobody ever saw Sam. You were allowed to imagine her to be your idea, your fantasy of the most gorgeous creature ever, certainly far from the reality of Mary Tyler Moore, who at the time was a fast 23 or 22 years old, freckle face, all-American girl next door type.
Now, let me jump ahead to the Dick Van Dyke Show. What were you told about the character of Laura?
Just that she was going to be a wife, a television wife, and that really had its classical parameters and dimensions, and they were established, and they hardly ever varied except as to whether or not the wife was the star of the show, in which case she was the funny one, or if she were the straight man for the male star, and she was then totally supportive. But all these wives were kind of obedient and, you know, a representative of the vows to love, honor, and obey. They hardly varied from that. And with Carl Reiner's character, the way she was written, Laura actually had opinions of her own. And while she was asserting herself, she also didn't make Dick Van Dyke look like a dummy. It was a matter of two people. I mean, society's expectations at that point still said, hey, wait a minute, lady, you only go so far here. But I think we broke new ground. And that was helped by my insistence on wearing pants, you know, jeans and capri pants at the time, because I said I've seen all the other actresses and they're always running the vacuum in these little flowered frocks with high heels on, and I don't do that, and I don't know any of my friends who do that, so why don't we try to make this real, and I'll dress on the show the way I do in real life.
But it wasn't that easy. The sponsors were afraid you'd look brazen.
Right. They pointed specifically to, they used a term, cupping under. And I can only assume that that meant my seat, that there was a little too much definition. And so they allowed me to continue to wear them in one episode, one scene per episode, and only after we checked to make sure that there was as little cupping under as possible. But
cupping under referring to the fit of your pants.
The fit of the pants,
on
yes.
On your behind.
On my behind, right. But within a few weeks, we were sneaking them into a few other scenes in every episode, and they were definitely cupping under, and everyone thought it was great. And the funny thing is, you know, women liked me. They were not envious of the fact that their husbands had a crush on me. It was okay with them. They were the first to, you know, when I would meet people, they'd say, my husband loves you so much, and he thinks you're so sexy. And this was an odd thing, because they were also able to identify with me as a friend, as a girlfriend. There was no resentment, no fear.
Yeah, well, I think that speaks so well for the character and your portrayal of her. Why capri pants? Why not longer pants?
There was a store in Los Angeles in Beverly Hills called Jack's, J-A-X, and a man named Jack Hansen owned it, and it's now no longer there. And he designed these trousers, and they came in all fabrics and all price ranges, from cotton to the finest moire silks. And I adored these pants. I loved them. I lusted after them. And I could just barely afford the cotton ones. But when I had a paycheck and it was on a regular basis from, you know, dancing in the chorus, I would make sure that I added another pair of pants to my wardrobe. And those were the design that I wore along with several hundred other young women who shopped in Beverly Hills then.
Mary Tyler Moore is my guest. She has a new autobiography called After All. Why don't we take a short break, and then we'll talk some more.
Okay.
This is Fresh Air. Back with Mary Tyler Moore. She's written an autobiography. It's called After All. Now, how did you come up with the voice to say, oh, Rob?
I don't know. I guess it began with the cry. The first time I cried was the episode in which Laura bleaches her hair blonde, looks in the mirror, and with her friend Millie's help decides she looks more like Harpo Marx than what her goal had been. And so she quickly tries to dye it back before Rob gets home from work. Now, this is a real stretch of the imagination. She decides to dye one half of her head back, not being able to get the other half done before Dick walks in the door. And so she greets him, half blonde, half brunette, and sobbing. And I had always been a big fan of Nanette Fabre, who worked with Carl Reiner and Sid Caesar on the shows. And I loved her humor. I loved the way she cried. And so when I was called upon to bring forth the tears in my scene, I'm not sure how much of it was out-and-out stolen from Miss Fabre and how much of it was just a matter of influence, but there was definitely a cracking in the voice and an inability to maintain a tone and a certain amount of verbal yodeling that took place. And from that came, oh, Rob!
did you do a lot of rehearsing with Dick Van Dyke? Or did you just have to do it minutes before the actual broadcast?
Oh, the whole show was done in what they call multiple camera technique. It's still done today. But back then, we were maybe the sixth or seventh show to use the technique. It began with Joan Davis, not Lucille Ball, as everyone thinks. Joan Davis did a show called I Married Joan.
What a girl, what a world, what a life.
Hey, yeah. Good for you. And then Lucy and several other shows followed. But in that show, it's a little like doing theater that's captured on film. You rehearse for 5 days. And then on the evening of the fifth day, the audience comes in, and the cameras, having blocked their moves and yours lined up with them, you film it from top to bottom in continuity. So during those 5 days, it was at least the first 3 days, it was very much a matter of rehearse and contribute and attempt things and not be afraid to fail, to make a fool of yourself. Just pick yourself up, and if it didn't happen this time, then the next time you experiment, maybe it will. It was a wonderfully supportive creative environment. And Dick Van Dyke was the most generous and supportive human being that I have ever worked with, and he very strongly influenced my life and my standards when I went out on my own later on.
Oh, I have another question about Laura Petrie's look.
Yeah.
Laura wore a flip. Perfect little flip.
Yes.
Whose idea was the flip? And how were you wearing your hair in real life at the time?
In real life, I was wearing it in a flip, but it wasn't quite as backcombed and lacquered as it was on the show. I mean, that thing had so much hairspray on it, you could hang clothes from it.
When you say that thing, was it your hair or was it a wig?
Yeah, it was my hair, but it was quite thoroughly sprayed and done by somebody else. But my in person in between shows, that was the way I wore it. It was just a little limper.
Well, let's talk about the Mary Tyler Moore Show, a show which I still love to watch. I'm so glad that Nick at Night carries these shows. I still love to watch the Dick Van Dyke Show and Mary Tyler Moore. Now, the Mary Tyler Moore Show got started because CBS wanted to build a series around you.
Mm-hmm.
And you and Grant Tinker hired people to, you know, come up with the idea, write a series. What was the original premise?
The original premise was not too different from the one that we ended up pursuing, but I was to be divorced from a doctor, and rather than having, as we ended up doing, having me live with this doctor through medical school and internship and residency and then been dumped, CBS felt that having been divorced was unacceptable from a societal point of view, that people would see nothing humorous in divorce. How could you possibly laugh at a woman who had a broken marriage in her past? And not only that, but my God, they would think you were divorced from Dick Van Dyke, the world's most wonderful, adorable person.
That's so silly.
Yeah. And instead, what's so odd from a morality point of view is that they found it acceptable that I had lived with this doctor, never married him, and then the relationship broke up and I went off to start my new life. So I don't know. Morality, I guess, is a very personal thing.
Mary Tyler Moore, she's written a new memoir called After All. We'll talk more in the second half of our show about the Mary Tyler Moore Show and about how her life changed when that series ended. This is Fresh Air.